You're listening to DraftKings Network.
Folks, Mother's Day is around the corner, and let me talk to you about 1-800-Flowers. I can't wait. Every year, it's a tradition. I send stuff to my mother, my mother-in-law, and my wife because they are three amazing moms. They're better than all your moms out there. You think you have good moms? No, I have good moms in my life. I'm just kidding. This was a little harsh. I'm sure you guys all have good moms too. From your mom to the mother of your children and all the moms in between, this Mother's Day, give back to the ones that have given you everything. 1-800-Flowers helps you celebrate all amazing moms, from homemade bouquets, sweet treats, gourmet food, and one-of-a-kind gifts, ordered easily and delivered fresh. For a limited time, you can save up to 40% off Mother's Day bestsellers at 1-800-Flowers.com/Dan. Don't wait. Order today and save up to 40% at 1-800-Flowers.com/Dan.
Now's a good time to remember where the story of tequila started. In 1795, the first tequila distillery was opened by the Cuervo family. And 229 years later, Cuervo is still going strong. Family-owned from the start, same family, same land. Now's a good time to enjoy Cuervo, the tequila that invented tequila. Go to Cuervo.com to shop tequila or visit a store near you. Cuervo, now's a good time.
Trademarks owned by Becle, SAB the CV. Copyright 2024, Proximo. Jersey City, New Jersey. Please drink responsibly.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Well, we left our homes up in Bristol Bay for the waters of Miami shore. With a hippo at the helm and our severance pay, we fly the pirate flag once more. Pirate radio with the ship and crew, we got wind in our sails and the sky is blue. There's a devil up our nose, so much work to do. For the pirate radio.
Is today the day we start a dialogue about Carter Verhaeghe?
What do you think, Roy? Is today the day that we should start that dialogue? Have you lured in Miami Herald columnist Greg Cody yet to talk some Panthers hockey about the most exciting team that we've seen around here in a long time for as many champions as we've had around here, Stugatz?
Yep.
A firepower offense points leader in the league is not something that has existed a lot in South Florida. Greg Cody, are you on the cat wagon yet?
I am on the cat wagon. I love the Cats, the Flaw Panthers. You know, I'm sort of resigned to the fact that they're going to disappoint me after two decades of history of doing that. But they're great. They won six in a row, season high winning streak. You know, they got Q, the best coach in the league. They got two good goalies. A lot of teams don't even have one. So, you know, the Bob is coming back. So, it's looking good right now.
The cat wagon?
The Bob?
I hate Ekblad's injury, though. Am I
What's
right?
What's going Ryan? On?
That's a killer.
Johnny come lately to the Panthers, huh?
Quick note. The Avalanche won last night and tied the Panthers in points. And since they have a game at hand, they are now overall first place.
Minor details, Roy. Don't get caught up in that. It's just for a day.
Buzzkill. It's just for a day.
Yeah. I didn't want to be Panthers hipster, but when Dan comes at it with cat wagon and Greg Cody calls it the Bob and not just Bob, it kind of grinds my gears a little bit.
Yeah. Because you're starting to see who's who.
Makes you want to stay away, or what are you?
I would like people on the pan wagon, but I'd like for people to call it by its rightful name.
The cat wagon.
So has the pan wagon taken off the way the rats did? Like, what has taken off with this Panther?
Nothing's taken off.
Let's try to get cat wagon off the ground. Let's see if that works.
Put it on the poll, Guillermo, at Levitard Show. Better name for the Panthers bandwagon, pan wagon or cat wagon?
Nothing's really taken off for this club since maybe the Spacey in Space sweatshirt. So we need a new thing. I'm trying to get this gif of my Nicaraguan friend Joel off the ground, and that seems to have some traction. question, but no, nothing really kitschy outside of everybody on this team having a Stugatz-like nickname. We got Achi, we got Driggs, we got Wenny, we got Barkey, we got Hubie. Everyone on this team has their name shortened and ending with a Y.
Cody. Well, that's just a sport, though. That happens on every team for every player. They always shorten the name and then end it with a Y.
It's absurd. I'm hearing goal calls that are like, Yandy to Eck to Driggs to Wenny well, to Barkey to Hubie.
No, no, wait. That has to be because the sport moves so fast on the radio that you can't say all these long foreign names.
They all call each other. Just it's not you know, it's just Wenny. It's Barkey. It's Hubie.
No, but I'm saying it. They need to speed it up on the broadcast. Hockey on the radio has to be very difficult to call, does it not? Hockey on television has to be very difficult to call.
So you're saying they're shortening those names because it's hard to pronounce? It's their job to pronounce those names.
I'm saying it just makes it quicker, Stugatz. I'm not saying they have difficulty with the names the way that you do. I'm saying that they have to speed through the broadcast.
I think we should all have those type of nicknames here, too. They make the show move faster, right, Mikey?
We got Witty. We got Billy. But Roy, you can't if you give anything. Roy a nickname, it's right. Longer than Roy.
Bells.
Wah.
Belly.
Is that
I mean, if you? Lester Reinen scores, that's going to be a bit of difficulty for Doug Plagans to actually say on the radio.
What's his last name?
Lester Reinen.
Rhines.
Stugatz just
so difficult.
Stugatz just dared you. Stugatz said, go ahead, bring me some of your challenges and watch me splice and dice them into nicknames right before your eyes. It's my magic trick. I can do it in Vegas.
This is gonna sound a bit absurd.
It's an act.
Because I love hockey. Hockey at one time was my favorite sport. It was my first job working for the Panthers. I was so excited for it. But I was looking into this Wayne Gretzky character, and he was good.
He was great.
He was so good. We refer to things as, well, that person's the Michael Jordan of blank. No, we should call them the Wayne Gretzky. Wayne Gretzky is so much better than the next closest hockey player. It's absurd. You can kind of talk yourself into LeBron versus Jordan. There is no debate when it comes to hockey.
For a while, it was Gretzky and Mario Lemieux, but you're right. Gretzky surpassed him, did it very quickly. Well, I should say Lemieux never caught Gretzky because Gretzky came first, but Gretzky is by far the best ever.
Wait. Hold on. He's
the greatest person, Dan. There is no one better at their sport in the history of sports than Wayne Gretzky was at hockey. How about that?
Tiger.
Nicholas is better than Tiger.
No. Not even MJ, man.
I think it can be said, and without much dispute, you want a hair split on Roger Federer or Serena Williams or a bunch of other people, that's fine. But I think it's pretty well known in sports that he was greater than anyone at that sport. Greater than anyone has been between the difference between first and second place across sports. But that's not the part I want to examine. I want to examine what you just did with Gretzky and Lemieux. Yeah, and you tried to push me off it. And you did it with your fingers. And I just want how you have Lemieux surpassing Gretzky when he was after just how you had that whole construction of Gretzky surpassed Lemieux, even though he was before him.
This stat kind of trumps everything. Wayne Gretzky has more assists than anybody else in the history of the National Hockey League has total points.
It is. It's fairly ridiculous.
I love that, man. I really do. What do you think that means?
Greg, I want to talk to you about what I walked into today because I had seen a group conversation about a bit being produced, and I thought the idea was funny. And I remember that a long time ago, before the coughing, before the voice problems, a long time ago, your Mickey Mouse was really not good, but above average. It was. I believe the Mickey Mouse, and when you do drunk Mickey Mouse or angry Mickey Mouse or limited fake Mickey Mouse, which was you just saying the word Eisner, can you do that for us here?
With your mic unmuted?
With your mic unmuted, Greg.
Eisner!
Yeah.
Greg.
Yes, sir.
I'm here.
I can't imagine what Chris Cody goes through because
who needs me?
Myself in his shoes doing an entire show. Dan had to do this on Highly Questionable. Doing a show with my dad seems torturous.
It's the worst.
Chris, every time, okay, like you, do you absorb that the same way I do, which is what sweeps over you very quickly is, wow, Greg, really, your first contribution to the show today is going to be not having your microphone on.
I mean, this isn't the first month we've done Zoom. It's been over a year.
He's killing it, guys.
Leave him alone. Exactly. Yeah. Jeez, okay, enough already.
All right, and that's fair. Chris, you and I fall on the wrong side of this because people do think we are too hard on your father, even though they have no earthly idea how difficult he makes it to do this podcast. Just with daily, and by the minute, things like that. But what I want to ask you is the bit that I just walked in on, I heard them describing Mickey Mouse in ways I've never heard Mickey Mouse sound before, where they were saying, well, he doesn't sound angry and bitter and drunk. He just sounds like he's had a really hard life. And so what, when and how did your Mickey Mouse impersonation go to shit? Because I think the best part of this bit is going to end up being how bad your Mickey Mouse is.
Yeah, Mickey, you know, I'm tight with Mickey. I can't speak for him, but I know he was really upset about what he ranted about. And, you know, it's tough. It's tough being Mickey Mouse. You know, you're the face of a whole corporation. You get no respect. You know, Mickey's been shunted. He's been pushed off to the side. He can't hide his bitterness. He does drink a lot. He's a Scotch drinker. And, you know, it's just tough. It's tough. So, you know, again, I can't say, you're going to hear Mickey later, perhaps he'll speak for himself, but I know he's had a rough life. Nobody gives him credit.
I don't know what you're talking about. Put it on the poll, Guillermo, at Lebatard Show. Does Mickey Mouse not get enough credit? I feel like
he gets all the credit.
I feel like he's credited plenty.
Yeah. It's an important backstory for this very niche character.
Okay, so it's an embittered, resentful Mickey Mouse, and what is he doing? What is this? What can I tell the audience before we get to this produced bit? Are you happy with the bit, Mike? Because what I walked in on, the sound of his voice did not sound anything like Mickey Mouse. The bit doesn't. The bit doesn't work if Mickey Mouse doesn't sound like Mickey Mouse, unless Greg Cody does a Mickey Mouse so bad that it ends up being funny.
We've actually helped him out here with the post-production because the original audio that we got is just straight up like emphysema Mickey Mouse. So we
can we hear that audio though?
No. It made me sad. It was not funny. I'm listening to the bit and I'm like, oh, my friend's not healthy, and also Mickey, this isn't good.
So after some post-production and making it sound like it was a voicemail, we have a bit of Mickey Mouse calling Paul Pierce immediately after the fact. Now, since obviously Disney made the decision to mutually part ways with Paul Pierce, but this was audio immediately after the fact, before the Board of Governors got together, in which an angry Mickey Mouse left a voicemail for the truth.
Hello, no one is available to take your call. Please leave a message after the tone.
Pierce! Hey, when the caller ID says Mickey, how about you pick up the damn phone? The mouse doesn't like to leave messages. And remember who signs those Disney checks, B-Double. So what the hell are you doing with this Instagram Live shit? Christ, Iger's and Pataro's here over this, so Jimmy's all over my rat's ass to try to clean this up. Poker chips flying around the room. Strippers twerking. Another one giving you a back rub, neck rub. Then somebody in the comments writes, where's Rachel Nichols? I knew we should have traded your ass to TNT for Wade when we had the chance. You know what D. Wade was doing on Easter? He was posing with Gabby and the baby in front of a freaking wall that said, family, surrounded by a bunch of lilies. And there you are in a den of iniquity with a stripper named Lily, embarrassing ESPN and the mouse. You take away everybody's cell phone. You make them all sign NDAs. And then you broadcast a drunken bacchanal on Insta Bleepin' Gram Live. I haven't been this mad since I caught Minnie drunk in bed with Daisy Duck. 92 years together, and now she cheats on me. I gave Minnie her big break in Steamboat Willie in 28, and this is the thanks I get. She'd have been just another back alley crumb hunter if not for Mickey. Or one of those strippers mainlining tequila shots at your party. Truth, you need to get your Disney image makeover and squeak it up after this debacle. And that starts with an apology tour. You're going to have more heartfelt mea culpas than career assists after this. The morning shows and Oprah are calling, for Christ's sake. Plus, we're going to have to offer Rachel Nichols a raise to lie and say she thought the whole thing was harmless fun. Buy yourself a big wall that says family like Wade. Stay off Instagram. And Pierce, the next time the mouse calls, you better pick up that damn phone like your job depended on it. Or you'll end up on the street with your hat in your hand, digital panhandling on Cameo with 50 bucks a pop.
Okay.
Hey, crushed it.
Okay, no, that is, I need to explain something to the audience as I spent that entire time not laughing. And as an added bonus saying, wow, way too long. That could have been good if not for how distracting it was that sounded nothing like Mickey. Like, I actually think that delivered well as Mickey, that could have been funny.
I think Eisner is easy to deliver. I think when you start expanding Mickey into sentences and paragraphs, it gets very, very difficult. Okay. I'm serious.
I think that
degree
is,
of difficulty
I,
high,
I believe,
man.
That is a textbook definition for good idea, poorly executed.
I'm not a miracle worker, Dan. He doesn't sound like Mickey anymore.
Hey, everybody, it's Mike, and typically I record these Miller Lite spots in the studio, but I requested that I specifically record this one from my home office because I got a window, and I'm looking outside at those beautiful fishtail palms, knowing that in just a few seconds, I'm going to go out there, I'm going to crack open a can of Miller Lite, because while sitting outside by my fishtail palms is usually a good time, I like to take it up a notch and make it a Miller time. That's right, you crack that puppy open, and you don't have to think about what you're drinking for a darn second. A lot has changed over the years, including my backyard. Lots of landscaping being done right now. But the one thing that hasn't changed is the undebatable quality of Miller Lite. You don't have to choose what quality is the best. Miller Lite has great taste, and it's less filling. Tastes like Miller time. To get Miller Lite delivered right to your door, visit MillerLite.com/Dan, or you can find it pretty much anywhere that sells beer. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96 calories per 12 ounces. Fewer calories and carbs than premium regular beer.
Roy, I'm so happy for you and your Panthers, man. You're the only one who really cares.
Not true. I've watched every game.
I would say over time, though. I'm not saying that you don't. I would just say over time, Roy is really invested.
Roy is identifiable as the world's biggest Panther fan. But right.
I know you're into it.
Still got my badge from working at the NCRC.
But yeah, I feel like Roy was watching games every night when they were like 20 games below 500.
Oh,
like
David Booth,
for the last 7-8 years.
Yeah, Roy never doubted the sport. He stuck with it even during lockouts.
Who is the most famous Panthers fan in the world?
Roy.
Who is the second most
Kevin
famous?
Spacey.
Spacey, damn. Yep.
When are we going to do an oral history of Kevin Spacey night by podcast?
Hold on now. Raising.
Jesus Christ, man.
Oh, I mean. Wrong.
Is it time to retire Pavel Bure's jersey number? He didn't have playoff success, but he was so great.
Have they retired any jerseys?
Yeah, Luongo.
Luongo. That's it? Just
the
Lou?
Number one, yeah. Well,
not the Beezer, huh?
No, not the Beezer. They can't ever do that now because the Beezer, I don't know if you remember his controversy, but nah, you can't do that. I think the Beezer is acknowledged in the Den of Honor, but his jersey is not going to be retired.
What about Mellenby?
I don't think
Ole
so.
Ole Jokinen then probably would be.
Yeah.
Ratman.
Ole. I was actually looking through it. Maybe Bomeister. Bomeister is probably the greatest defenseman in franchise history. This is kind of weird. Steven Weiss actually has an argument, but they never had any postseason success, and you need those postseason moments, really.
It's got to be off that 97 team. Right?
Not that Luongo had postseason success, but he was, I mean, a very long-tenured cat. He held down the number one goalie position for so long, like half the franchise's existence.
What kind of audience do you think that we're reaching? And I say this genuinely. When the name Scott Mellenby is said, and Greg Cody gets in with a rat man, and now we're not only talking hockey, but we're talking hockey from 23 years ago. So a generation of people listening to this have no idea what we're talking about when Greg Cody gets in with rat man. Do you want to tell this story? Because, Greg, you actually, that's the last time you personally actually cared about the Panthers. I saw you at some Pavel Bure games, and I want to put on the poll, Guillermo, please, at Lebatard Show, is it now time to retire the jersey of Pavel Bure? I don't know why Mike is asking that today.
We can get around to that after we start our dialogue about Carter Verhaeghe.
They need some retired jerseys in that arena just to show a little bit of their history, something, and Pavel's the best one they have, I think.
But if you put Bo Meester and Pavel Bure, it's basically a shining beacon to all the lack of success that they had.
I mean, Bure had back-to-back 50-goal seasons.
Bure was, he was electric when he was down here. He's my favorite hockey player of all time. That guy was unreal. He was next level. But it was, when you look at it, like a two-year run for Florida. I don't know if it's enough to have your jersey retired.
It is rare, obviously, that Miami gets the guy who's best in the world, right? And that's what Bure was looked at back then. You're basically talking about they've had LeBron James, they've had Dwayne Wade, they've had Shaquille O'Neal, they've had Dan Marino, they've had Ricky Williams.
Miguel Cabrera.
Miguel Cabrera is another
Alfredo
one.
Alfredo Amezaga.
Thank you.
Michael Jordan.
And that's right, yeah. Jersey retired at the Heat's arena. Mm-hmm. But Pavel Bure is a guy who streaked across the sky here, was dating Anna Kournikova.
The Russian rocket.
And Roy Stugatz was just saying before we started this segment that he feels bad for you. He believes you to be not only the most famous hockey fan for the Panthers that there is in the United States. Put that on the poll, Guillermo, at Lebatard Show. Is Roy the most famous Panthers fan in the United States?
Since Spacey.
And that you, he felt sad for you, Roy, because now you got a whole lot of people on this cat wagon saying that it should be the pan wagon because you need to you need to respect the integrity of the wagon. And you've been here alone for a long time. Nobody's been on this wagon with you, Roy.
Yeah, it's been a lot of lean times for this team. I mean, when you've been to the playoffs like seven times over the past 30 years, that tends to happen. But yeah, I mean, at least the Marlins won two World Series, but they've been to the playoffs three times in their entire history. It's just been lean times. It's been sad. I remember one season where the Panthers had this terrible promotion where they were dressed up as monks and they were ringing a bell. And like, that was embarrassing.
I remember that.
You were there for that, Roy, weren't you?
I
remember when Mike Keenan came onto the team and set this team back a good 20 years. I remember when they traded Luongo to Vancouver.
What are you, Dikembe Mutombo, waving your finger about, Billy?
Roy, these are the times you're going to appreciate. Yes. Those are the times you want the struggle so that when you do finally win it, it was all worth it. And you can go back and reminisce on all the hard. You don't want to just be given championships. You don't just want the best player in the world to come and give you these championships and then you pretend like you have this culture, all that. Now, you don't want that. You want the hard times so that you come in and then you earn it. And then you're like, you know what? I look back fondly at 2024, whenever it is that they win. That was the year that Lord Stanley resided in the wherever it is that they play now.
Right. You want to have to go through all that stuff. But Billy, here's the problem. I've been telling myself that as a Jet fan for 40 years.
But when you get it, Stugatz, it's going to be so good.
Yeah, but I'm never going to get it. That's what I feel like.
Well, that's another thing.
The monks. Wow. I totally forgot that chapter in Panthers history.
The monks.
Let's do an oral history.
The monks. They actually have a guy right now that I think Huberto gets his jersey retired. He's a franchise leader in points. Did you know that? And by a lot.
Is
by like
really?
A Gretzky margin. Okay, by like 30.
That was like reading the other day that Westbrook is the career leader in triple doubles for the Wizards. He's been there for 40 games. It's because the franchise. Roy, honest to God, your verbiage, the way that, and I know you're sparse and efficient with your words, but when you describe what your fandom has been for the last 25 years of this team as lean, like when you describe it as lean, you're really underselling what that experience has been. Roy, did you not become a hockey fan? I don't know how much experience you had with hockey before this, but was that 97 team not the reason you became a hockey fan?
No, I became a hockey fan in 93, or 92, actually.
What's the backstory?
The Blackhawks, yeah.
So
and
what's
then the Sabres.
And so what ended up happening there? What happened with the Panthers of 97? So three teams.
96.
God. 96.
God damn,
they went to the cup final in 1996.
Newcomer.
96-97, yeah, it carries over and all that. Yeah. Yeah. If we're looking for a jersey to retire, I want to see if you guys will get behind this. A Panther jersey to retire. I think they should put Roy's jersey up in the rafters.
Wow.
We have to get this done.
Wow.
Yes.
Put that on the poll. Should
Panther super fan, man.
Roy's
Roy gets those customized jerseys, so his number's number one, too, like Luongo.
No, it's 11.
Yeah, Roy's an 11 guy.
He deserves it.
We all
that would be Bill Lindsay's jersey, by the way.
Well, who deserves the 11 more on the Panthers, Roy or Bill Lindsay?
Bill Lindsay.
No, Roy.
Let's have a Roy Bellamy night.
Yes, let's.
Well, technically, they did that already.
Right. Can you imagine them pulling up your jersey to the rafters at the Bank Atlantic Center? Oh, my God.
BB&T Center.
What is it?
BB&T Center.
Still in Sunrise?
Yes, still in Sunrise. Now Truist, by the way. Change the name of the bank.
So go ahead, Cody. Just weave a tapestry of tales told from 1997, the last time you cared about Panthers hockey.
It's 96. Why do we keep saying 97?
It's the 95-96 season. Jesus.
I remember that that series. You know, it's weird because they lost. They got swept in the finals. But yet it was an enchanting time for about a month. This was actually a hockey town. Roy, you remember that. I mean, that playoff run they made in 96, led by the Beezer and the Rats and Mellenby, Brian Skrudland. I mean, that was an enchanting time, and you could make an argument that that just for a little bit, for a little patch of time, this was a hockey town, and it was amazing because they've never come close to replicating that, never, nothing like it, and it was magical. I remember it well. I remember being there the night they were eliminated, and it was such a feeling in the arena, the old Miami arena. The fans were in love with that team. And it's rare to feel that. I don't know that I've felt it since. Maybe during the Big Three era, there was a little magic there. But otherwise, no.
That was the first team that captured my imagination as a sports fan. That was the first team that really had some success. That cup run was amazing. The fact that they went through a murderer's row
it's
in
who
the Eastern
they beat.
Conference.
It wasn't just that they
Bruins,
were a bunch of no-names.
Pens.
No, but it was the players too. It was Lemieux and Yager on the same team. It was Lindros. And then it was the Bruins, a historic franchise.
It was a murderer's row. I would go to Arbetter and get rats. I would throw rats at my TV when they scored. I'd go to Sports Authority and visit the Prince of Wales trophy after they would take it on the tour after they won it. I was allowed to touch it. The players weren't, because you don't touch the Prince of Wales. You only touch Lord Stanley. I love that team. And it really caked into me that was my team. My room was all hockeyed out. My covers were all Panthers. It was the job that I wanted in sports. The lockout, unfortunately, took a lot of the wind out of my sails. And then
your
the
covers
heat
were Panthers.
Yeah, man. My bed sheets, all of it. I was 38 years old.
Dan, do you think if the Panthers had success after that 95, 96, 97 season, whatever year it was, do you think that hockey would be more popular down here? Like, do you think it would have stuck down here in a way, like, you know, the way Roy loves hockey and appreciates hockey? Had they parlayed that into more success?
Those things are the magics you need to create generations of sports fans. Like, that was something. Mike Ryan, Cuban kid Mike Ryan, would have no reason to have access to what are they doing at the Miami Arena? What are they're doing? They're throwing rats on the ice because this sport that's down here that none of us knew anything about growing up, because the only access down here, I don't think I have this wrong historically, is Canadians visiting Hollywood. A lot of sandals and socks and just sort of bringing some of that hockey with them to Hollywood, Florida. But otherwise, none of us grew up around hockey. So this team, man, this is back when I was actually doing journalism. I went to Prince Edward Island to watch the game with Doug McLean's dad one year, just because we were sort of like just caught up in everything that was happening and had no perspective about how to cover that team.
They miss an entire year. An entire year. It was the year that I took up an internship with them. but an entire season lost to a lockout.
Mike Ryan might be like an assistant general manager of a hockey team now, if not for the lockout.
You mentioned Mike Keenan. I would ride the elevator with Mike Keenan. And yeah, I had a corner office. Michael Yormark really took advantage of the fact that I was free labor and I decided to leave.
But that's what I'm saying. It's unfortunate because you had, you know, bed sheets, pillowcases, mm-hmm. you had posters, you had everything going on in your room, and you're a kid from South Florida who didn't know much about hockey. Had they had success after that, the Panthers could be like the team in town by now.
You see what's happening in Tampa.
Well, you see what's happening with the Heat.
What's an incredible story. Tampa's legitimately one of the great hockey towns in the United States because they won a cup, I think, back in 04. They've had sustained success. They've been making it to Stanley Cup Finals. They just won the Stanley Cup Final. It is embedded within that culture there. The Bucs just won the Super Bowl, and I know football is king. You go to Tampa, all lightning flags everywhere.
Chris, were you too young for any of this? Did you have any Panther stuff? I know you were a Dolphin fan and a Marlin fan, but were you following the Panthers in 96?
I mean, yeah, I'm really young then, but I was spoiled by my parents. I was at, I believe, the last game in that series. Didn't it go to like triple overtime or something where they got eliminated against the Avalanche?
Oh, game
yes,
four.
Yes, it did.
Classic.
I was at that game, and I was just excited because at some point late in the game, my mom's like, all right, you don't have to go to school tomorrow. I was like, yeah, late game.
I think part of the magic of that 96 playoff run was that it wasn't sustained, that it was it disappeared. So in the memory, it's like a, you know, like a snow globe. It's just an artifact that we look back on. Did it really happen? Was that real? Was it magic? You know, I look back on that playoff run in a way that I don't with many other sports that I've covered over the decades. It's got a special place for me.
Because it was the only one?
That does make it weirder.
It's rare.
It is the local hour, and I know that this is not exactly an inclusive conversation. 96 Panthers is a hard sell to the nation. But
it was a fun time, people.
Yeah, it is. I mean, what was your favorite 96 Panthers memory?
Oh, man, how could I forget the feeling, the electricity in the air when you knew something special was going to happen, something unexpected, the feeling of the heat coming off the ice. That's right.
I don't think he comes off.
No,
he rises. He rises.
He was the way heat rises off of bullshit.
Man, let me tell you something. I cannot shake the memory of Tom Barrasso fighting with the Beezer.
The goalie fight.
Yeah,
great fight.
And you know what happened, right?
Yeah.
He took a pill in the Beezer. Yeah.
Yeah.
Just to show Avicii he was cool.
What? Oh, he took a pill in a Beezer is the That's joke.
That is actually a good joke. It's a good joke.
What do you mean that's a good joke?
Out of left field, I had to process.
It was a good joke. It was.
It's a good joke.
It was.
It's a song.
Yeah.
Who are you shouting that at?
I don't know. Context.
Then now you decide to explain the joke. That's the time.
Avicii.
Yeah, who can forget Billy Lindsay soaring through the air to do something? I don't know what the last part of that.
He soared
against
like
the Bruins.
He soared like a turkey, just up in the sky.
The bees.
Like a turkey.
Turkey, huh?
Like a turkey? Why are you so bad at ad lib? I mean, you
all
can't,
he had was Bill Lindsay.
I mean, can't you just create a little ad? Let's start again. Let's try this again, and you're going to try and develop some fake enthusiasm with generic sports cliches about why it is that you remember that Panther run, even though at the time you were a young kid growing up in Sudan, and it wouldn't make a lot of sense for you to have a lot of access to that 1996 Panthers run. So go ahead and have at it. The floor is yours.
Dan, everybody, actually, I am a Panthers fan from day one. Who can forget the youthful exuberance of Jason Woolley? Can I get an amen?
Amen.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
I was surprised the other day, Stugatz, when all of a sudden on The Jump, the show that Amin was on, Windhorse brought something up and Rachel Nichols, she's not really a newsbreaker, but she talked about it as if it were a thing that were known. Kawhi Leonard might be interested in opting out and ending up with the Miami Heat. And now an agent, Evan Massey, who does some of this reporting and sourcing, says that Kawhi would be intrigued by joining Bam and Jimmy. Now, I don't think that there is an athlete, anyone in that sport, that I would believe information was to be had around him from others. Like, I don't believe anyone who says anything about knowing what Kawhi Leonard is going to do.
Actually knows.
Because right. The last time this happened, right. The last time that Kawhi Leonard was available to people, it was unbelievable how it caught us off guard, right? None of us saw Clippers, Paul George, what just happened. It was out of nowhere. It was seismic after the decision, after everything else. So I simply, across sports, I don't think there's an athlete around whom I don't trust the information unless it's coming from him more than Kawhi Leonard. But where does this come from? I mean, other than it's logical, other than you can report that someone would be intrigued by something, because of course it was reported that he wanted to play with Jimmy Butler before, and why wouldn't Jimmy Butler and Bam Adebayo be attractive to just about anybody who wanted to, if they had the cap space, which they do? Why wouldn't anyone like Kawhi be interested in that? It just doesn't make sense to me that Kawhi Leonard just moved his entire life and bought a $17 million home on that side of the country because he wanted to be over there with Paul George. I would think Kawhi Leonard would want anyone traded to him, not the other way around.
This is what happens when you spend a season and a half with Paul George. I mean, it is. You want out.
It's really good, Stugatz.
Thank you. I know. The truth, though.
No, he got fired.
No, it's PG-13, yeah. The truth.
Sorry. Though. Okay. Yes.
No. Hey, look, Dan, here's the deal. First of all, it's not like, oh, I bought this house in L.A. No one's going to want it now. Oh, what am I going to do? I'm stuck with this house. Look, everyone lives in L.A. in the offseason anyway. So that's not an issue. That's not going to be an impediment for him making a move. But the reality is this. We know that Jimmy Butler was his first choice. I mean, that's always going to be a fact, right? That Jimmy Butler was the first dude he wanted to play with. And then Paul George was, okay, that'll work as well. And so that connection is there. You see the success, more importantly, that Miami has had, a success that is more reminiscent of the success that Kawhi has experienced in the last two stops in San Antonio and Toronto, in the sense that, wow, it's a real team thing. And they find ways to win, and they're not necessarily going to just roll out the ball and win by talent. And that's kind of what the Clippers have been, maddeningly so. You know, the other night they lost to an Orlando Magic team that went on a 17-3 run to end the game with names like Okiki and Terrence Ross and Michael Carter Williams on the floor. I mean, this is what happens to the Clippers. They don't take their opponents seriously, and they lose. And I think for Kawhi, for a guy who's not a vocal leader, he's not a guy who's going to get in people's faces. I think there's a comfort in knowing, A, there's a place where we don't have to get in other people's faces because the culture does that. The culture makes all of us, holds all of us accountable. And B, if it comes to that, there's a guy there who's going to do that work while still respecting the boundaries. I think Jimmy's the kind of guy who would look at Kawhi like, yeah, he's better than I am, in the same way that he says that about Bam.
Wow, so you're giving it a lot of credence. You're giving it a lot of logical credence. Never mind the reporting, because I'm not saying anything inaccurate, right? You don't trust very much coming out in the reporting on Kawhi Leonard because there are precious few sources who have anything in the way of access to him.
He is probably the most reclusive superstar we have in the league in terms of nobody knows what he's thinking. His circle of people around him is very tight, and they don't talk. Other than when Uncle Dennis was out there because Kawhi's name was getting run through the mud. So, yeah, I think in general you're right, your attitude of I don't believe that sources close to so-and-so think that he's going to do this, do that, because at the end of the day, players change their mind. You never know what might change their mind. I think the only time we had an inkling, well, not an inkling, we had a strong belief that a player was going to do something and he did it was Kevin Durant leaving Golden State. That one was like, an awful kept secret. But
didn't we feel like Kawhi was going to leave Toronto after that season? I mean,
yes.
I mean, it was there was a feeling, but at the same time, at the end of the day, there were three teams in the mix, right? Stugatz, because it was the Raptors, the Clippers, right, and the Lakers. And it was really a decision between those three. And I believe his decision was going to be if they couldn't get him, that second superstar, he was going to re-sign with the Raptors. It wouldn't have been a long-term deal, but that was, I believe, the flow chart of, if you guys can get me a star to play with, I'm coming to the Clippers. If not, I'm going back to the Raptors, and the Lakers were always kind of third place there. But then again, like I said, we don't know because it's kind of like it's Kawhi. He's a very secretive person.
It's an interesting personality match, too, because one of the things that should be known from the audience about Jimmy Butler is even in the recruitment of him, even though it happened quickly, Jimmy Butler was told at that time while being recruited that the idea was to bring in somebody who is better than him. Because Jimmy Butler doesn't care about that stuff.
Right.
Jimmy Butler at every turn has shown that that is not something. Now, it makes me a little incredulous. Like, what do you mean doesn't care about that stuff? But his history in Minnesota and with losing would suggest that he learned some of the things that are important about winning.
So I would just say, I remember when he was having his tantrum in Minnesota, and I said, he's a winner. And all of you motherfuckers looked at me, what has he ever won? What has he ever won? When did he go to the conference finals? That's what all of you motherfuckers in here said.
You right. called now, us twice already.
Yeah, well, you know what?
And we were right at the time. So.
No, you weren't.
No, we were wrong. We got to wear that.
At the time,
that.
We were right.
So, we got to okay. wear that. Dan just mentioned something, and I'll be the one since I'm a homer. Are we sure Kawhi Leonard is better than Jimmy Butler right now? No.
Well, before we get to that, hold on to that for just a second,
Homer
guy.
Oh, I love
guy.
That. That's
just,
juicy.
Hold on to that just for a second, Homer guy. Let's backtrack for just a second, because what I wanted to ask the group is sort of the chronology on how stuff burns out. Because you saw in Golden State four stressful years that burned out. You saw in Miami how it burned out here. You saw that Kyrie Irving realized after two or three years, hey, I'm tired of this LeBron's as my big brother thing. I want to do this a different way. You saw LeBron say, you know what? I'm going to grab the culture from Miami and I'm going to go back to Cleveland. I don't need the culture. I know what I know, and I can be the thing that wins championships by myself. Kawhi Leonard goes from San Antonio, where all he did was win and all he was great and also got to be in the shadows in private. And then he comes out of that and he immediately wins the championship. So at this point, he thinks, I'm the reason we win championships, right? I can go anywhere. Give me a guy or two and I will win the championship. Can Kawhi Leonard burn out on that fast with Paul George in a year and a half? I mean, a year and a half, you're telling me it's already fried? One playoff exit and already you're telling me that Kawhi Leonard would be willing to be maximum mercenary with the prime of his career, unlike any mercenary champion we've seen before him.
I think the biggest thing, Dan, is you got to recognize that there's a physical aspect to Kawhi. Like, his body is not holding up well. In fact, that was something that people talked about last year a lot, is that Kawhi doesn't feel well. At the beginning of the year, people were saying, oh, he's doing that load management thing again. And the Clippers were like, no, he's actually hurt. He's out because his body can't handle the rigors. And so there's a level of, I need to be able to depend on the supporting cast to carry this load when I can't be out there, so that I can be maximum Kawhi when it matters. And I think with Paul George, who's a great player, but there is an element of, this dude makes a lot of excuses, right? And someone like that can't be the person you depend on in case I can't go, in case I can't give it up. Can't be the guy who has more turnovers than field goal makes in a game seven and then talks about, well, my shoulder was hurting and I was in a dark place and actually it was a good defense and that was just a lucky shot. And actually, like, you can't be that guy. And actually, Doc didn't run the right plays for me. That's not the person that I can look at and say, you know what, if I can't give it a go, he's got it. And does it take a year and a half for that burnout to happen? Maybe. I mean, if it never stops, because at no point in this whole thing has Paul George ever been, you know what, guys, I didn't play well enough. I've got to be better. We'll be better next year.
But to Dan's point, that happened really quickly because there was the thought there. I mean, after he won in Toronto, that wherever Kawhi goes, that's where the Larry O'Brien trophy goes. Like, he could win anyone. He won Kyle Lowry a championship, and you certainly thought he'd be able to do that with Paul George, who's a much better player than Kyle Lowry.
I would like to walk back my Jimmy Butler thing.
Why?
No, I just wanted to ask Amin about Homer Mike's question. Is Jimmy Butler better than Kawhi Leonard?
It had to be asked.
Don't say it.
Wait a minute. Why are you walking it back and then saying it had
to be asked? Because Kawhi is a great deal better than Jimmy Butler.
By a lot, yeah.
I mean, yeah, this year, I mean, he's better from distance. Now, what I'm doing is Jimmy Butler had his moment recently, and Kawhi is just not the same player that he was. But he's still got a better purr. He's better from distance. I haven't been paying close attention to Kawhi, the defender, this year. But
didn't Kawhi have more of a moment? I mean, it wasn't as recent, but it was a year before Jimmy's moment, getting to the NBA Finals.
It's totally fair. No, Kawhi Leonard is better than Jimmy Butler, considerably so.
You can put on your Cortez hat and say Jimmy's better at the intangibles.
I mean, Jimmy's certainly a... Well, I can't even do leadership because Kawhi...
He's got two titles, man.
Jimmy's better at that. He's better at that. Like, Kawhi does not want to be that guy.
I think Jimmy could actually, it's a weird bridge, but I think Kawhi meshes with Jimmy. And
Billy,
Jimmy,
what are you shaking your head about? Billy,
hold on, Billy.
Why is cynical Billy here?
I was just about to make a good point.
Cortez is just being a monster in the chat, both publicly and privately, telling me that for sure Kawhi is coming, that it's a done deal. Then he's going on about Jimmy Butler and Ocean Drive. He's just a monster.
He really is. Can we get back to Mike's point?
Jimmy Butler told Ocean Drive magazine this week that the Heat will win it all. Quote, when we get there, which we will, we're going to get it done this time.
He's impervious to freezing cold takes.
Was that Cortez's little like note in the middle of that sentence? Or was
it's
that
hard
actually
to tell what reality is and what's Cortez's reality.
Which we will.
I am.
Cortez added that?
No, that is what the quote was from Jimmy Butler, but it is hard to tell when it's Jimmy Butler talking or Cortez. Cortez has ended all his texts to me recently with Heat and Five. It's not even about stuff that's Heat related.
I'm not a local, but Ocean Drive magazine, is that a real magazine?
Or yeah.
It used to be the fattest, glossiest, stylist. It had such a style, like a big, sparkly style. And now, like all magazines, it's a pamphlet.
Mm.
Super credible.
Does Cortez own it now?
Was he shirtless in that magazine? I think he was. He was shirtless.
He's really liking his new physique because he's lost, because of his battle with COVID, he lost a lot of weight, and he's a lot more shirtless than he used to be. And honestly, this team could afford to bulk some because Bam Adebayo has no shot when he goes into the paint. The guy gets crushed, and he's not getting the calls because his frame is so slender.
Mike Ryan yesterday, I believe, said Bam Adebayo is twice the defensive player that Rudy Gobert is.
Oh, Amin, back me up on this.
Yeah, this is a pretty interesting conversation in basketball circles, which is how good of a defensive player can Rudy Gobert be if you can game plan him out of the game, right? Like the best defensive player in the league can't be a guy that, oh, if I just do this, then he can't play. He's got to come off the floor because he can't guard that guy or it's out of his comfort zone and takes him away from the things that he's great at. And I think, I mean, that's a real thing. And Dan, I'll give you an example from last night. Dorian Finney-Smith scored 23 points in a win for the Mavericks over the Jazz. And after the game, they asked him, hey, you had a great game. What happened? He said, well, I knew once I saw Rudy Gobert was going to be guarding me for the game, I was going to have a good game. Dorian Finney-Smith said that. That's not LeBron. That's not Kyrie, that's not one of the great offensive players of the game. That's not even a great offensive player on the Mavericks. But that's how he's viewed. He's viewed as a guy that can be game planned out. And you saw that last year when he won Defensive Player of the Year, how many players were kind of snickering about this guy won Defensive Player of the Year, the guy that we roasted for this much or whatever. So I'm with Mike, actually. Bam is a better defensive player because I can put him in different situations and he's still going to be a good defender.
Go ahead, Ryan. Go ahead. Just close out the segment with what you wrote in the chat. Go ahead.
Well, Bam's better than Gobert. Can I get an Amin?
Amin.
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 He's a much better defensor. How much is Defensor killing you right now?
Mike, what was your point? What was it going to be?
I think Jimmy's actually a hell of a bridge from Kawhi to the teammates, because right now there seems to be a massive disconnect with the Clippers. Yeah. Kawhi's kind of shadow boss right now, and there's no one to... You saw last season, right? There was a lot of animosity from those people that were on the Clippers, a lot of people leaving the Clippers, saying Kawhi shows up when he wants to show up. There was a real disconnect between Kawhi and the rest of the team. Jimmy, I mean, Kawhi likes a cut of his jib, very clearly, and he's kind of crazy in the ways that Kawhi is about being a competitor, and yet he's relatable, as we saw with this team. So I actually think it's a good match.
But Mike, here's the crazy
thing. You're
right.
You were about to make a good point.
Here's the crazy thing. They weren't as mad about Kawhi because they accepted it. They said, okay, he's 2-time finals MVP. He's clearly a great player. We're not crazy about how he gets different rules, but we understand. But Paul George gets the same different treatment too. Like, what has he done? And that was the rift. The rift was like, we'll take it from him. We ain't going to take it from him.
And Kawhi's just quiet about the whole thing. Yep. And not doing the political stuff behind the scenes to make that actually fly.
Right.
It is pretty amazing. I mean, that Jimmy Butler's, if this pans out, is going to get Kawhi to come to him and not the other way around.
Oh, no. I mean,
that's amazing.
It's amazing. And then also, you know, Pat Riley's going to take credit for it, right?
Well, he should.
They're going to say, oh, Pat did it again. He landed another whale.
Well, he got the guy that Kawhi originally wanted to play with. So it's actually very smart by Pat.
And I always get a kick out of someone mentioning the point, because it's the first point people go to. He just spent $17 million on a house in the Los Angeles area.
Oh, but that's not the part. Actually, it's not just the part, cares, because though? I saw, well, but you say, who cares?
He'll have two homes.
I mean, Dan, he can have 15 homes if he wants.
How will he pay two mortgages?
Oh, my God.
I am not saying that he can't pay two mortgages.
Interest only.
I am saying he made kind of a big deal about leaving a pretty special thing. You guys just got done talking about the Panthers and these special runs. A pretty special thing in Toronto, because he clearly wanted to be home, and his two finalists were Los Angeles, were the Lakers and the Clippers. And the thing that I'm specifically asking Amin is, are you telling me that playing with Paul George makes you tired of a home in a year and a half? Of home.
I'm telling you that. Yes. I mean, you can ask Amin if you want. That's fine. He's the expert. I'm not, okay? But I'm an expert in pain in the asses. It takes one to know one. And Paul George is exactly that. And they signed him to a long-term deal, and Kawhi doesn't want to be around there with him. He doesn't. So we'll move across the country to get away from him.
Dan, I think it's less to do with being home and more to do with not being in wintertime. He's from Riverside. He went to San Diego State. He played at San Antonio. Then he spends a year in the frozen tundra that is Canada. And then he says, you know what? I want to thaw out a little. It's nice that his hometown team had the cap space and the ability to give him the caliber of team that he needed to join in order to feel comfortable. But I'm not going to make it seem like, oh my God, I miss San Diego so much.
You're telling me it's a real thing. You're telling me you expect Kawhi Leonard to be with the Miami Heat next year.
I'm telling you that it's logical that he would explore that option if it were available to him. There's a reason, Dan, he didn't sign a 4-year deal. He signed a short-term deal, a 3-year deal with an opt-out after 2, for a reason, so that he could reevaluate and say, is this thing working for me or not? Now, we saw Paul George had the same opt-out, didn't opt out, signed an extension, I want to be here, right? Kawhi didn't. He could have done the same thing at the same time, like, hey, you know what, let's keep this thing going. Instead, he's keeping his options flexible, and that's the right thing to do. And if there is a better opportunity in Miami where it's more established, where we have a style of play, and most importantly, the thing they have in Miami that they don't have with the Clippers is a voice in the locker room that is the unquestioned leader. There is no leadership with the Clippers. Kawhi is a lead by example guy, but clearly this group needs something more than lead by example. Paul George is a lot of talk, but clearly the respect level for his talking isn't quite there.
Amin.
Can I get an amin?
Amin.
Amin.
Hey everybody, it's Mike, and typically I record these Miller Lite spots in the studio, but I requested that I specifically record this one from my home office because I got a window, and I'm looking outside at those beautiful fishtail palms, knowing that in just a few seconds, I'm going to go out there, I'm going to crack open a can of Miller Lite, because while sitting outside by my fishtail palms is usually a good time, I like to take it up a notch and make it a Miller time. That's right, you crack that puppy open, and you don't have to think. about what you're drinking for a darn second. A lot has changed over the years, including my backyard. Lots of landscaping being done right now. But the one thing that hasn't changed is the undebatable quality of Miller Lite. You don't have to choose what quality is the best. Miller Lite has great taste, and it's less filling. Tastes like Miller time. To get Miller Lite delivered right to your door, visit MillerLite.com/Dan, or you can find it pretty much anywhere that sells beer. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96 calories per 12 ounces, fewer calories and carbs than premium regular beer.